You may be seated. I remember several years ago, a special moment happened in my life. At least I thought it was very special because I had been chosen for this great and glorious task. Of all the people on earth, it was me that had been picked. Maybe this was going to be my saving grace, and every problem that I had in my life was going to be over, and I was going to be freed from all those things that were weighing me down, and I'd never have to work again the rest of my life. I mean, after all this poor Nigerian prince needed to safeguard his money was me and my bank account number and my social security number and my birth date, my mother's maiden name. How many of y'all ever got that email before? All right, I was just kind of curious. I actually thought for a second I was the only one. But after looking at this, all I could picture is out of Star Wars, what's his name? Admiral Akbar, when they come and they're getting ready to try to blow up the Death Star, and he shouts, "It's a trap!" Ooh, all right. Well, Jesus, it's a trap. The Herodians, the Pharisees, these answers that they're asking you, they're doing it because they have intentions that are far from pure. They have intentions that they're trying to destroy your validity and the kingdom that you have come to establish and the relationship that God desires to have with all of creation. And these questions that they posed to him, when answered, they were hopefully going to force Jesus to fall out of favorability with the general public and to cast a shadow of doubt over the validity of his own Son of God claims, because the answers to these questions about money would be an answer they wouldn't want to hear as the people of God. Or an even better scenario for these Pharisees and Herodians, who I shall now refer to lovingly as the stumbling blocks, that answers to these questions might actually end up implicating them with the Roman authorities. It might pit this little guy here, this little guy who's supposed to be a good little person in one of the many nations that had been conquered and consolidated into the empire, against that imperial peace machine. You remember that from sixth grade social studies, that whole Pax Romana thing that they instilled into everyone, but not like the Pax Romana I try to keep in my household. But instead, that Roman peace, I love it whenever I get to talk about the Roman peace. I love picking on you, baby. I love you. But that Roman peace, I like to call it at the end of a gun barrel. Because you know what happens to those who stand or kneel against the imperialism or against injustice? Become a pariah. They may as well have the plague. Because the only person who is going to touch or even acknowledge their presence is, well, Jesus. And it's here that Jesus shatters them those preconceived notions and perceptions that we then have of both the church and of taxes. Because this is one of those great and wonderful texts we have that still perplexes and challenges us in what we think and what we do, because you know, right now, I'm walking around, I got a whole bunch of money in my wallet with a bunch of dead white guys' faces on it and a phrase added during the Red Scare because no one wanted to give in to them godless Soviets. Actually, I lied. I don't have a whole lot of money in my wallet. There might be an Andrew Jackson floating around in there left over from the Pumpkin Fest. But in looking at what those tricksters were doing, they were trying to implicate him with that poll tax, you know, the tax that Roman subjects, but not Roman citizens, paid, which we can obviously see why anyone in a conquered territory would hate that tax, right? Seems to be more like a punishment for not being Roman, but yet living under Roman rule. So Jesus answers with the two kinds of authority that we, the people, have. And the fact is that the people have to respond to a civil authority, the Roman authority, but then we also have to respond to the authority of God. And in looking at our faith, Jesus proves elusive for that trap set for him by talking about these two different authorities that we have to be aware of and that we have to live under. By using that coin with the emperor's head on it. Because here Jesus has established that this power, that this authority, that this emperor is someone that seeks to control our lives. You know, then there's that other text, render unto Caesar. But by simply calling for us to return that which belongs to God a little bit later, he has given everyone there a challenge in their own lives. Herodians in power by the government, Pharisees in power by the religion, were more concerned with maintaining the power and the authority that they had been dealing with than the spiritual aspects of their lives. Instead, they were worshiping that person on the coin. I guess you could say they were in some kind of survival modes, so to speak. But this survival mode cost them their spiritual freedom when it came to being in a relationship with God, as God was no longer primary in their lives. The grace, the peace of God was no longer in the front of their hearts and at the forefront of their minds. They had forgotten. We were created in the image of God, and they had forgotten that. But I'm not going to argue against the civil society, because yes, we're accountable to that. That goes without saying. But how it is achieved is more important. Because if we come forward to live and serve in our society and our community with an unclean heart and unclean mind, then we're no better off than some of the folks we see today who are supposed to serve us, who are supposed to have the best interest of us in mind. But instead, folks look after their own well-being and ignore the fact that they are serving a people of God. You know, civil righteousness, I believe, is also then directly connected to spiritual righteousness and our connection with God. Because as spiritual beings, our faith is shaped by Christ in us and through the Spirit. And though the two, we can separate and we can see where they are two distinct entities, but oh man, are they ever so intertwined with one another. And in calling forward these two aspects of both the faithfulness and the righteousness and our obligations to each and every single one of them, Jesus is reminding us of the differences that exist for us as citizens of the state and more importantly as citizens of heaven. Jesus, however, and so eloquently in his speech, has carefully suggested that we owe the state, that we owe the government exactly what is demanded of us, in which case is going to be that piece of idolatry that they were carrying around in their pockets, that coin with the head of Caesar on it. Because in this, Jesus is exposing the irony and that hypocritical nature that the Pharisees and the Herodians' religious activities and their activities in general, because they're more concerned with their own power than honoring God. And that's the problem. Because to whom do we belong? There's no better place than to go back to the beginning there to Genesis, as Pastor Romy did this morning in the children's message. Let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness. Likeness. Whose likeness was on the coin that Jesus asked for? Whose image had been cast upon that metal? Now, I don't know how many people in Jesus' audience would have picked up on that kind of imagery there. Whose likeness it's on that coin, but in whose likeness are we created? But more than likely, someone who read and studied the scriptures as they would have done, especially in Genesis. They would have flashed back there to the beginning, to that creation story. They'd have been taken back to that initial pronouncement that was made about us when we were created. In God's image, we were created, and it was very good. You know, we bear God's likeness, and we are then made to be more than we sometimes realize. It's quite a little statement there, isn't it? We are made to be more than we sometimes realize. You know, being made in the image of God, and because we bear God's likeness as we walk around every single day in our lives, it shows us that we're supposed to act like God. We're supposed to act like Jesus. We're supposed to act like the Christ. Not like gods who lord themselves over others for their own self-righteous reasons, for their own selfish gain. But instead, for the one who creates and sustains and nurtures and redeems all of us, all of creation, no matter what the cost, even his own son on the cross. Because we have been called to be vessels of God's action and of God's love here and now as God's workers, not exercising dominion over creation. That's a poor translation of that word, but rather to serve as good stewards of that which we have been tasked to oversee. And I love it because Jesus never calls them to be disloyal to the emperor. Jesus also never labels them as blasphemers of the faith. He doesn't accuse them of anything. There are no allegations being made. Instead, he gave them that label that our society seems to love tossing around these days, hypocrite. He does this because they've forgotten who and whose they are. That graven image has become their God. Their memory no longer serves them as it should. But how often has this kind of thing happened to us and throughout our history as Christians? Because what lies before us is an opportunity to be the children of God that we have truly been created to be. We have to reclaim the identity in whose image we have been created and be the creation that God so desires us to be. You know, through it all, through our society, it is so easy for us to look and to judge other people. To say, you're wrong and I'm right. The way I believe is the right way to believe, and you're wrong, and there's nothing you can do to change my mind about anything. That happens so much in our society that nothing can get done. That the love of God is lost and forgotten. But as people of faith, we claim our spiritual identity. We have to recognize that the complexity of today's issues call for us to be the beacons of light even more so than we are today. We must uphold the values that Jesus instructed us in. We have to make sure that we have a place for all who have been created in God's image. And it's going to be hard work. There is absolutely no denying that. But in the end, when we get to the other side, we will look back and we will see exactly how good a work it truly was. And that God has tasked us to do. So as we look forward to our future, where do our hearts rest? Where are our minds? Have we placed God center in our lives? And are we fulfilling the calling to be the beacon of light and hope for all in this creation? Amen. Thanks be to God.